As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
The Mind Flayer. It built this monster in Hawkins. To stop Elle, to kill her, and pave a way into our world.
And it almost did. I was just one tiny piece of it.
How big is this thing?
It's big. 30 feet at least.
Yeah. It sort of destroyed your cabin. Sorry.
Okay, so just to be clear, this big fleshy spider thing that hurt Elle, it's some kind of gigantic weapon?
Yes.
But instead of like screws and metal, the Mind Flayer made its weapon with melted people.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, okay. I'm just making sure.
Are we sure this thing is still out there, still alive?
I'll beat the shit out of it, but yeah, it's still alive.
But if we close the gate again?
And cut the brain off from the body.
And kill it, theoretically.
Welcome back, everybody, to Stranger Danger, where today, finally, we talk about Stranger Things 3, Chapter 8, The Battle of Starcourt. But before we do that, I want to take a few moments to give some shout-outs to people. Some fair, great, wonderful listeners out there that I have heard from on Facebook, on Instagram, on text message, and I've seen in Apple Podcast reviews. So, and in no particular order, and if I missed you, then I apologize, but I went digging through everything and I made a list, and I want to give a shout out to Stephanie Quick, who messaged me on Facebook. Thank you so much for listening. A shout out to David C., who apparently I've known since I was 3 years old. A shout out to Alex on Instagram. Thank you for listening. A shout out to Smila Wergeni. I apologize if I screwed up that pronunciation, but thank you so much for the email that you sent. A shout out to Abigail Webster for a great email and a review on Apple Podcast. Shout out to Zoldman, and from someone else who says, I want to be anonymous, please. Well, you're still anonymous, but thank you for the Apple Podcast reviews. And of course, the last one to Cubone and Net to Train the Lannister Fan on Apple Podcast. Thank you, everybody. Oh, wait, one more. A shout out to Jess up in Biddeford, Maine. It says here, your boyfriend is a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan. That's sad. And lastly, it looks like Stranger Danger on Spotify is the number 32 television and movie podcast in the country of Mexico. So I should have really looked up the right way to say this, but what? Muchas gracias, Mexico. Thank you guys so much for listening and supporting the show. So why don't we get started right away talking about the Battle of Starcourt right after we hear from today's sponsor. Our episode opens right back up with the adults. We got Murray, we got Hopper, we got Joyce, who we last saw racing away from the fair after Alexei's murder. They're trying to get the kids back on the radio, but they're not having any luck.
Still nothing?
Nothing.
Food court? You sure they said food court?
I'm sorry, have my translation skills been letting you down?
We don't know it's your kids.
Yes, we do.
Joyce knows. She just knows it's their kids. And she does not slow down that car at all as she heads off to the mall. Speaking of the mall, we cut over to the Starcourt Mall and we're with Eleven. And she is in some serious distress. I believe it was the last episode. It ended with her screaming in pain. And right now she is screaming, she is sobbing, the bite on her leg is pulsating, and everyone there, all the other kids, are just looking on helplessly. You can actually see something moving under Elle's wound. It's pretty gross. Jonathan is like, keep her talking, keep her still, keep her awake. And then he runs off to one of the food court restaurants, jumps over the counter, grabs some gloves, a wooden spoon, and what looks like a knife. And then he heats the knife up over a burner on the stove. So he has a plan. He runs back and he tells Eleven, you need to hold still. He gives her the wooden spoon to bite down on. So at first I was like, why the hell does he want a wooden spoon? But obviously he wants her to bite down on it because something painful is about to happen. And yes, he cuts right into the wound in her leg with the knife, and the kids are freaking out. Eleven is screaming in pain. I'm freaking out. Then he goes into the wound with gloves on, and he starts fishing around with his fingers, and it is gross. Everyone is kind of getting like squeamish and freaking out. Eleven is like just completely in so much pain. She finally like screams for him to stop. She takes the spoon out of her mouth and she's like,
I can do it.
So now everyone just kind of stands back and she starts like using her powers, and you could see she's in pain. She's pulling this thing and it's moving, it's wiggling, and she is like putting everything she can into this, and she exerts so much power, so much force, that the window behind her just shatters. And she does not stop. Everyone freaks. She does not stop. She gets this thing out of the air, out of her leg, flings in the air, and flings it across the floor, where it walks a little, it walks a little, and then the foot of Hopper crushes it. And the kids and the grown-ups are finally united. I love a good reunion.
So the opening credits come at that moment, and then we come right back to the mall, and they're all standing around. Hopper is comforting Eleven, and Mike is basically catching everybody up, catching all the adults up, catching up the mall rats, kind of letting them know what they've been up to this season, right? All that gross Mind Flayer stuff, all that monster people goo stuff. That was the clip that I played to open up the episode. So Murray comes over with some rough, like, blueprint schematic sketches of the underground base that Alexei wrote out for him. He's going through these things, but that's when Erica butts in. It's actually a pretty funny moment, saying that if you listen to Mr. Bum Man, you're all going to die. And Dustin is like, she's right. You're all going to die, but you don't have to. Now, Murray is beside himself, annoyed as Dustin takes over. And what I like is that Murray is basically annoyed by the kids throughout the season. He's annoyed by Dustin most of all, I think, because Dustin just emits confidence in everything he does. And for some reason, that really strikes Murray just in an annoying way. So Dustin takes the notes. He basically takes over. He takes the sketch, and he shows them how to get to the weapon much quicker using the ventilation system. And he's like, it's a bit of a maze, but between me and Erica, we'll show you the way. Hopper's like, you'll show us the way? And Dustin's like, look, don't worry, okay? You can do all the fighting, all the scary stuff, and we'll just be your navigators. And Hopper just looks at him in a very matter-of-fact way and says,
no.
Nope.
Look, these kids have been through a lot. Dustin has more experience down there than any of the adults. But come on. There is no way Hopper is going to let those kids go down there. So we cut immediately to, it's like the same scene, just like 5 seconds later. Hopper's going through some of the dead Ruskies stuff to get guns. And Erica is like, we're all going to die. And Dustin's like, yeah, we are. And Lucas trying to be positive. He's like, hey, you guys survived. And there was a great moment, actually, where Dustin said, barely. He goes, we really could have used you guys down there. I missed you. And we missed you, too. And it was nice just to kind of see all four main boys together showing a little emotion, showing a little vulnerability, and just kind of, you know, how much they really all depend on each other. And, of course, Erica is right there to put an end to all the mushiness with the great line, please don't cry, nerds. Hopper then breaks things up and comes over, and it turns out he doesn't totally dismiss Dustin's idea of getting help navigating the underground base.
Hey, heads up. You can navigate just from someplace safe.
It's not that simple.
The signal won't reach.
Not with this. You need something with a high enough frequency band to relay with the Russians' radio tower. But for that to work, you need to have someone who has both seen their comms room and has access to a super-powered, handcrafted radio tower. One preferably already situated at the highest point in Hawkins. Oh, wait. That's me. If you want us to navigate, you got us. But we need a head start.
And a car. I love it. I love that line. So, Steve, Robin, Erica, and Dustin all head off to, they need to get to Dustin's super cerebro ham radio. I love that the radio is coming back into play. They introduced something in the first episode. It really didn't play much of a part till then, but now it's going to have some sort of payoff. And more importantly, the car. Oh, they get to all drive the Todd Father, which Steve seems to love. It's like, oh, come to Papa. He's got himself a convertible. Which, believe me, I'd probably still love driving a convertible. I've driven one a couple times. So they all pile into the car and they head off. You know, the group finally comes together, which I've mentioned numerous times how much I love this. And immediately they start breaking off again. We got the radio gang heading off. And now we got the rest of the kids. We got 11, Lucas, Mike, Will, Max, Nancy, and Jonathan. And they're all heading to Murray's house to stay safe. So They gave him keys for this. And there, that's the plan, Elise, okay? You and I know, you know, nothing quite goes as planned when it comes to Stranger Things. But that's the plan. So there's a nice touching moment where Eleven, you know, says to Hopper, she's like, you know, I can fight. And he's like, yeah, better than anyone. I know. But right now I need you safe. He's like, this thing is after you. It's not after me. Do you understand? I need you to understand. It is every moment with Hopper and Eleven in this episode is sad to me because it just feels tragic. Now, you and I know it doesn't have to end tragic, and it probably won't end tragic, but they don't know this, okay? So just seeing them, how much they've bonded, how close they've come together, I love it, and it just makes me sad that they, there's going to be at least a while before we ever see something like that again. So, and I wrote this down. They hug, and when you realize it, or at least at the time, this hug, I believe, is the last moment they're together, right? You know, I just watched this. You think I'd know. But, man, heartbreaking. He tells Mike, he grabs Mike one more time. He just tells him to be careful. And then the kids are all off. And then Joyce walks right up next to Hopper. And Hopper's like,
It's a two-man operation. Two!
Yeah, well, change of plans.
Change of plans?
Yeah, we explained to him.
We have two options here, Jim. We can turn the machine off or we can explode it.
Oh, yes, says who?
Says the man who built it.
Yeah, and we want to explode
it. Or else our heroic efforts will be for naught. This is a three-man operation, Jim, not two.
Yeah, three!
So as much as Hopper does not like the idea, Joyce is staying with him and Murray as they make their way deeper into the hidden Russian base below the shopping mall. I love saying that. The hidden Russian base below the shopping mall. Just think about that. How excellent that is. So the rest of the gang pile into the Wheeler wagon, and of course, classic 80s horror movie trope, the car is not starting.
Serious, come on!
Didn't your mom just buy this car?
Yes, I'm sure it's fine.
Did you leave the lights on?
No.
Do we have gas?
Yes!
Come on! Whoa, stop. Pop the hood. What the hell?
What?
The ignition cable's gone.
Oh shit, that's Billy's car. Okay. So the ignition cable's gone. So obviously there's been some sort of dastardly deed done to this car. And we see Billy, or at least possessed Billy, revving his engine, basically pronouncing his intentions to take them all out. Nancy, being really the badass she is, just quickly, without even thinking about it, just boom, get everybody out of the car, everybody back into the mall. So we go back to Murray, Hopper, and Joyce, and they're making their way down the same elevator that the Mallrats did a couple episodes back. Murray is talking about yanking on these cables to set off an alarm. According to Alexei, may his soul rest in peace. That should give Hopper and Joyce enough time to retrieve the keys to get to the vault, and then they could go and turn the machine off, and the machine will go kablooey. The rift is closed, and then they sneak back out through the vents, home free, easy peasy, right?
Oh God, just because it wasn't your plan doesn't mean it was a bad plan.
I didn't say it was a bad plan.
You made noise.
I did not make a noise.
You
I didn't make
I
a
really
noise.
Think that it's
disrespectful what is up with
for you
and children? Children.
It is a good plan.
A solid B, which is laudable given the situation and time constraints.
Dare I say, if it all goes right, they'll never even know we were here.
Of course, the next second after Murray says that, the elevator door opens up, and there are Russian soldiers with guns standing right there. They start to kind of raise alarm, but Murray's like, no. He starts speaking in Russian, trying to calm them down, saying he has documents for their lieutenant. It slowed them down for a second, but one of the guys is like, what lieutenant? And then Hopper just comes out with a machine gun, bam, 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 and blows those soldiers to smithereens. Now, look, it wasn't very low key, but it was effective. Murray's like, I had it under control. Joyce is like, what are you doing? What are you doing? He grabs one of the soldiers' hats, puts it on, and says, improvising. It was a very kind of like cool moment. You know, it was like, what are you doing? I'm improvising. Reminds me of like what is it? The CBS like CSI where David Caruso would take his glasses off and say a line. I don't know. Just the improvising just felt really cool. I don't know. We cut over to the Todd father car. And Robin, Steve, Erica, and Dustin are speeding along, listening to tunes. According to Dustin, they're almost there. And Robin mentions, wow, Susie must be pretty great to go through all this trouble to talk to her. Kids, you couldn't possibly understand. You just couldn't get on your phone and video chat with friends back then for free. You know, even phone calls were out of the question because there was something called long distance. Ask your parents. Ask my parents the amount of money that I spent on long distance calls when I was in college, calling my girlfriend. I married her, though, so it worked out. But we still haven't paid them back. In fact, don't mention this to them because I don't want them to ask about the money. Anyway, Dustin is like, look, nobody's perfect, but Susie is about as close as you can get. Erica calls BS and says that she sounds made up. And she asks Steve, who hesitates just long enough to get Dustin annoyed. Then he just yells, left, turn left, out of nowhere. There's like no road. And he's like, turn left. Steve cuts it left, right onto some grass. They smash through this fence. And they're basically four-wheeling through like this wet, grassy field. Steve and Robin are panicking. They're like, where are we going? And Dustin says, up. And they're heading up the hill. But unfortunately, the Todd father has its limitations. And they end up getting stuck. So they all have to get out and they have to hoof it the rest of the way up the hill. At the top of the hill, we do see Dustin's antenna. And we can hear a voice coming clearer and clearer in. Scoop troops, do you copy? Scoop troops. Say that fast. Do you copy? I guess the gang that I've been calling the Mallrats for the last few episodes, they are now the Scoops Troop. So the Starcourt 7, wait, 7, right? I counted it. So we got Lucas, Max, Will, Mike, 11, Nancy, Jonathan. Yeah, 7. Right? Starcourt 7. They're still in the mall. And we see the other end of the conversation. Mike is using his walkie-talkie to call to the Scoops Troop, trying to reach them to let them know that Billy has disabled their car and they are trapped in the mall. And while this is going on, Nancy, of course, is checking through the dead Russians looking for guns. Have I mentioned yet in this episode what a badass Nancy has become this season? I know I've done it in the past, but I feel like I deserve to say it constantly. Now, Max is like, you're going to kill him, aren't you? Talking about Nancy and Billy. And Nancy says, this is only for precaution. And it's not just for Billy. Because if Billy knows that they're there, so does the Mind Flayer. Mike is repeatedly trying to get Dustin over and over on the line, but no luck. So Nancy jokingly says, can we get that car to drive? And, you know, it's the smash car that Eleven used to destroy those Russian soldiers. And Jonathan had a pretty good idea. He's like, well, we don't need the car. We just need the ignition cable, because that's the cable that Billy stole from the station wagon of the Wheelermobile. So all the kids strain. They're like trying their best, trying to flip the car over so they can get to the cable, but they just aren't having any luck.
Shit! Let me try.
Elle.
I can do it.
So everybody stands back, and Eleven, in a weakened state, tries to use her power to move the car. She seems to be giving it all she can. Her nose is bleeding. She's struggling. And suddenly, she just lets out this gasp. And we don't know what happens because we cut back to the Russian bunker. So there's this Russian guard who's stationed, I don't know, someplace down below. He's smoking and he's, just kind of minding his own business when along comes this tram car approaching. In the car, there are two soldiers in ill-fitting uniforms that he does not recognize. In the tram, we see that those two soldiers are Hopper and Murray. So they pull up. And Murray starts sweet-talking the guy about how they just arrived, explaining why he didn't recognize them. They talk a little bit. They share a good laugh, actually, and he lets them through. Once they get through the way they wanted to go and the door closes, Hopper and Murray pull the tram over, open the back where Joyce was hiding. She's also dressed in uniform, and she looks even funnier because she's so small, dressed in this man's uniform. It just looked cute and funny. It's a funny moment because both Hopper and Joyce are like, what were you doing talking to that guy? And Murray's like, he was nice. He seemed like a nice guy. They're like, a nice Russian spy? He's like, yeah, he seemed nice. And Hopper's like, yeah, great. We should invite him over when all this is done. Following Dustin's orders, they walk up a few steps to this platform where Murray takes a grate off the floor, which leads to the ventilation system. And Murray is like, ugh. Anybody want to trade jobs?
Bald Eagle, do you copy?
Bald Eagle, I repeat, this is Scoop Troop. Do you copy?
Yes, I copy.
Call sign?
Bald Eagle.
Please repeat.
Bald Eagle, this is Bald Eagle.
Copy that.
Good to hear your voice, Bald Eagle. What's your 20?
We reach the vent. I'll contact you when I need you. Until then, silence.
Roger that, Bald Eagle. This is Scoop Troop going radio silent. 10-10, over.
I hate children.
I love the look on Dustin's face at this moment. Like, you could see he's so kind of, like, proud and almost, like, showing off how good he is at knowing the jargon of talking on the radio. And Steve gives him a nice pat on the back. Like, he's proud of him, too. I thought that was pretty funny. So Murray goes down into the vent and says to Hopper and Joyce, remember, if anybody says anything to you, and they've heard this before because they both repeat back to him, yes, just smile and nod. And they wish him good luck. And he starts crawling as Hopper puts the cover back over the grate. And yeah, pretty sure that's the last time Murray and Hopper see each other. Back in the mall. Doesn't look like Eleven did much. Maybe she helped, I don't know. But it looks like they did it using physics. Mike was pretty proud of that. They used a bunch of poles to kind of use as levers to give them leverage. And they flipped the car over. And Jonathan and Nancy open the hood, try to kind of find where that cable is. As Max notices Eleven going through some garbage, Eleven finds a can of Coke, new Coke. And then she takes it, puts it up, and she tries to crush it, you know, as she did back when she was a much younger kid. Doesn't seem to be working as Mike and Max approach. So Nancy and Jonathan get the hood open, and they're looking around for the cable. And, oh, God. Will feels the hair on the back of his neck stand up. Oh, I don't like this. Suddenly, there's this loud banging. Max looks up and notices the ceiling glass shaking. And cracking. And oh no, the monster here.
Got it.
Nancy!
So Mike calls out to Nancy. They realize that the monster is up on the ceiling and they make a run for it. Just as the monster crashes down into the mall and lets out a hell of a roar. Yeah, okay, that was a little scary. I would run, too. We cut back to the Russian base below the mall, and the elevator is racing down again. But this time, as it opens, we see the Russian thugs. It's that one scary Terminator-looking dude and three, you know, kind of less impressive-looking Russian schlubs. I don't know. They don't scare me like this main crew cut guy does. they walk out of the elevator and they find those dead soldiers just strewn about, three of which have their uniforms removed. So there's no doubt now, it is known that there are filthy American intruders in their house. We cut over to two of those filthy Americans, Joyce and Hopper. And Hop's nervous. He thinks everything's taking too long. And of course, that leads them to start bickering. But things quickly calm down.
You know, I think despite everything, I mean, despite the arguing, I think we make a pretty good team.
Well, we made it this far, didn't we?
Yeah. We did. We did.
So, did I get the job or what? Oh, come on. Detective Byers. That's a ring, doesn't it?
It's kind of hard to serve in a town where you don't live, detective. You're still moving out of here. I mean, that is the plan, right?
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
How it goes? How what goes?
You know, if we actually do make it out of here, we deserve to celebrate, right?
Yeah. I mean, yes. Absolutely.
I hear Enzo's is pretty good. What do you say, Friday, 8 o'clock?
Elle likes to watch Miami Vice on Fridays. It starts at 10, so I can't be out late on Friday.
Okay, well, how about 7 then?
7? Enzo's Friday. I meet you there.
No, you pick me up.
Picking you up 7 p.m. Friday.
Yeah, it's a date.
Just for clarification, just because if when you say date, just so that we're crystal clear about things, so there's no confusion. Yeah.
Stop talking or I'm gonna change my mind.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Long clip, but look, this is the finale. I'm not gonna hold back. I liked it. It was worth it. It's a nice personal moment for them. Just to kind of take a breath and just talk to each other. And again, knowing what we know now, you know, at the end of this episode, or at least knowing what Joyce knows now, because we know more than Joyce at this point. This is sad. Makes me sad. We cut down into the vent where Murray's crawling along. He calls out to the Scoops troop that he reached another junction. Erica and Dustin remember that he needs to fly right because it came right after that My Little Pony discussion. Now, up on the hill, Robin is asking about My Little Pony when Steve gets their attention because off in the distance, he notices the mall and some crazy flashing lights going on down there. They run back to Dustin's radio and the Scoops troop tries to call the mall group over and over. He keeps calling him the Griswold family, which is great, because if you know, the station wagon that the Wheelers are driving looks a lot like the Griswold station wagon from the original Vacation movie. Back at the mall, it looks like nobody's actually manning the walkie-talkie, and Dustin's calls are falling on deaf ears. Oh, wait, no. Not on deaf ears, because the friggin' monster picks up the walkie-talkie. Picks it up, and it seems like he almost, like, realizes what it is. Like, he can hear the voices. He can, you know, he can kind of, like, stare. And it just throws it, smashing it. And I'm wondering if maybe because it's made up of, you know, liquid people, maybe it has some sort of awareness. I don't know. Or it just reacted to the sound. And it was so sensitive to the sound that it saw this thing and it wasn't 11, which is what it wants. So it smashed it. The radio smashed, but it's still somewhat working. It falls by the smashed car, and on the other side of the car, we see Lucas, Nancy, Jonathan, Will hiding, scared. I mean, they all look scared, but Will looks downright frightened out of his mind. And really, why shouldn't he be? He's been dealing with this monster and the Upside Down and the Demogorgon and all this garbage for so long. He's been dealing with the most. The monster makes his way through the mall area, and we actually see that Mike, Max, and Eleven are hiding in another spot. Now, Dustin is trying his best to reach them, but it's just not working. So Steve and Robin are like, we got to go. They take off. Steve runs and says, we need to get them the hell out of there. And Dustin throws Robin a radio so they can keep in touch, and then calls out to the bald eagle to ask what his 20 is. And Murray is like, I told you, radio silence. He's like, yeah, but we have a bit of a problem. And of course, Hopper's on the same channel. So he's like, what kind of problem? And well, we don't get to hear what Dustin says to Hopper, but you can imagine they don't really know what it is. They just know there's something going on at the mall. Now, meanwhile, the adults are thinking, what? Everyone left. They're all at Murray's. And I'm not even sure if the Scoops troop knows that the Griswold family is still stuck in the mall. I know Mike was calling out to him, but did I miss it? Did Dustin connect? It's a long episode, but it's a great one. Anyway, back at the mall, the monster is lurking. Turns this way, turns that way. And when it turns away, Mike, Max, and Eleven make a run for it through the gap. They, Eleven know there's an exit in the back of the gap. So they make a run for it. I don't know if I've ever shopped at a Gap before. Anyway, so much is happening at once. We're back with Murray, and the bald eagle has landed. He takes out Alexi's sketches, and he finds what he needs. He tells Hopper and Joyce to get ready as it's almost their turn. Back in the Gap, the tentacle arm of the monster is searching, lurking for Max, Mike, and Eleven. But he can't quite find them as they keep hiding. As this is going on, Murray just starts yanking at wires. The Russians down by the machine are freaking out because they're like, what the hell's going on? The machine starts sparking, and it looks like it's starting to slow up a little. And a guy runs in with a hazmat suit, and he sounds the alarm. When Hopper and Joyce hear this alarm go off, they know it's now their turn. Then Hopper runs, uses the key card, and they rush out of that room. Back upstairs in the mall, while the kids in the Gap are kind of being pinned, Lucas readies a slingshot. Nancy's like, what are you doing? And Lucas is just like, don't worry. He as the monster seems to be closing in on the Gap, he jumps to his feet. He looks scared, but he looks very determined. And he pulls back that slingshot. And he, at the last second, he turns to where he was aiming. He was aiming at the monster. He turns and fires at a balloon. The balloon pops, and that distracts the monster enough. So now they all make a run for it. Let me tell you, I had a slingshot like that when I was a kid. Okay, maybe when I was like in high school. Okay, maybe I was in college. I was not very good at it at all. Now, down below, back in the base, the alarm's going off. And Hopper and Joyce are just running, avoiding soldiers. But they run into one guy. And he asked them if Mikhail sent them. That was my Russian accent. And they did exactly what Murray said. They smiled and nodded. And guess what? It worked. He let them pass, and they made their way to the spot that they were looking for, which was the this red room with this safe at the end with a keypad. And they approach that, and then Hopper starts to enter in the code that Murray gave to him.
Give me the code.
662-608-004.
Again?
662-608-004.
Yeah, that's not working.
Murray, your goddamn code is wrong.
What? Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well,
I suppose it could be wrong.
How could it be wrong?
The code is a number, a famous number.
Planck's constant. I thought I knew it.
Planck's constant.
You know it?
Not by heart. You?
I'm not a nerd. What are you doing?
So just to paint the picture of what you just heard, Murray put in the code and it's not working. And not Murray, Hopper put in the code that Murray gave him. It's not working. And he's freaking out. And Murray's like, well, I thought I knew it. Alexei said it's Planck's constant, which is a specific number. And so Murray wrote down what he thought was Planck's constant. And guess what? It's not working. But Dustin was like, you know, he's a nerdy kid. He's a smart kid. He's a genius. And his, you know, he hears Planck's constant and he's like, something triggers in his head. He has an idea and he starts, you know, spinning the frequency, changing the frequency, basically getting off the frequency that they're all on for whatever this idea is. And Eric is like, what are you doing? Outside the mall, Lucas, Will, Nancy, and Jonathan run out to the car. And Jonathan tries to fix it with the part they took from the car inside the mall. So they're trying to get the car started. They're trying, you know, Jonathan's trying. Lucas and Will are like freaking out. And all of a sudden you hear the car revving again. You know that Billy's out there. And Nancy stands there like a badass. And Billy takes off straight at her. Does she run? No. She starts shooting and firing directly at Billy's car. And then out of nowhere, the Todd father saves them. Steve and Robin drive their car directly into Billy's car, which now is caught on fire, and they crash and kind of swerved out of the way.
You okay?
Ask me tomorrow.
Now the two of them are seeing this giant monster for the first time, standing on top of the mall. Then out of nowhere, Nancy and Jonathan's car with Will and Lucas pull up and they climb in the back and get the hell out of there. But not before the monster starts chasing them. Drive fast. Faster. It's at this point of the show where things seem to just pause for a quiet moment. A peaceful moment with a star-filled sky that pans down to a house with a big antenna on it in Salt Lake City, Utah. Excuse me, Salt Lake City, Utah? Utah is over 1,500 miles from Indiana. What the hell are we doing here? Wait, it's Susie? She's real? Of course she's real. Why would Dustin lie to us? So it's a nice little reunion between Susie Poo and Dusty Buns. I did like Erica's reaction to hearing her say Dusty Bun. But when she yells at Dustin to get that goddamn number, Susie's like, who is that? And Dustin, he lies. Right after I said, why would he lie? He says, there must be some interference. Let's switch to another frequency. But actually, that was a slick way to get her to switch over to the same frequency as everybody else. We cut back, and the monster is legit chasing the Wheeler Wagon. Just want to give a quick shout out and RIP to the Todd father. So the monster is legit chasing the Wheeler Wagon down the road. In the car, Steve and Robin overhear Dustin and Susie's conversation, and both of them look at each other like, oh my God, Susie! Like, they didn't believe him either. Nobody did. So Dustin goes ahead and asks Susie if she knows Planck's constant. Susie's like, I haven't heard from you in a week, and all of a sudden you get on here and you ask me for Planck's constant so you can, what, save the world? He promises that he'll make it up to her. And she's like, well, you could make it up to me now.
Not right now.
Yes, now, Dusty Bun.
Susie Pooh, this is urgent.
Yes, yes, you're saving the world. I heard you the first time, but Ged is also saving Earthsea, and he's about to confront the Shadows, so this is Susie signing off.
Wait, wait, wait. Okay, okay. Okay.
Shit. Turn around. Look at what you see. In her face. The mirror of your dreams.
Is 6.6267004.
You didn't think I wasn't going to play that entire song, did you? First of all, I have to say that if you don't know what this song is from, maybe you looked it up after the fact. You're like, what is this song? And then you went and looked it up and saw that it is The Neverending Story from the film The Neverending Story that I absolutely loved as a kid. It was like the story of a kid reading a story and the story becoming real because he was reading it. And it was just like, I thought it was the greatest thing in the world when I was a kid. And looking back on it now, just the song of it, hearing the song, it hits you in that nostalgia bug that Stranger Things does so well. So definitely look up The Neverending Story if you haven't yet. So anyway, Susie comes out of nowhere. The entire season, she was just a name. And she comes out of nowhere for really an unforgettable moment. And at the same time, she doesn't realize it, but she actually just help save the world. The best part of this, though, is the reaction of Hopper, who just has this look on his face like, we're doomed. It was priceless. I loved it. So Susie and Dustin go back and forth, exchanging these nice, cute little pleasantries until Erica just finally has enough with it and turns the radio off, leaving Susie just standing alone back in Utah. But then Hopper gets the safe open. He uses the code. It works. Gets the safe open using that number, and gets his hand on that all-important briefcase. Back at the mall in the parking lot, Billy don't look so well, but he is still alive. He pulled himself from the fiery car. Was it a Firebird? Did he pull himself from a fiery Firebird? That would be poetic. He got to his feet just in time to see Eleven, Max, and Mike trying to sneak out of the mall. But then they notice him, so back in they go. Max swings back really quick to press the button that closes the gate, but the gate closes so slowly that I doubt it'll work. Back on the road, we see the Wheelermobile. It's still chugging along and still getting chased by the Mind Flayer's monster. And then it just turns around, just heads back. Lucas thinks, oh, maybe we wore it out, but Jonathan doesn't buy it. So he turns the car around, spins it around, and heads right back to the mall. My guess is that Billy sees Eleven, and since everyone's connected, now the Mind Flayer knows that Eleven is not in the car. Eleven's still at the mall. So why chase these kids? We don't care about these kids. They don't matter. All that matters is getting to Eleven. And that's where the monster heads back to. So Billy easily opened up that gate that Max closed. Inside the mall, Max, Mike, and Eleven are trying. They're trying to run, but they can't go very fast. Underground, the Ruskies are going crazy. They're panicking. Murray is pulling all these levers. And then inside the control room where the weapon is, Hopper and Joyce show up. Hopper fires a machine gun into the sky. It's pretty awesome. Everybody runs. And then they see the rift. And they see the weapon. And the gate. And the look on Joyce's face. The pain that she knows this thing has given her family. And then Hopper asks her,
"You ready to end this?"
And they're ready. Ready to finally put an end to this. Back upstairs in the main part of the mall, Mike, Max, and Eleven are trying to get on an elevator to escape, but uh-oh, here comes Billy.
Billy. Billy, you don't have to do this. Billy, your name is Billy. Billy Hargrove. You live on 4819 Cherry Lane. Billy, please, my Max.
Max pleads with Billy, tries to get him to remember, to realize who he is. I mean, you know Billy can be a dick, but he's not evil. Max believes this. But her words prove empty as he just walks up and smacks her right in the face. Then Mike tries to, like, defend the honor or tries to fight back, and he gets knocked out pretty quickly. And then Eleven tries to defend herself with her powers, but nothing really happens there. He smashes her head, knocks her out, throws her over her shoulder, and takes her away. The Mind Flayer has the prey that it has been searching for. And all it took was possessing Billy Hargrove. And I am pissed that this is going on. And you know, Mike tried, Max tried, Eleven tried. And they none of Eleven, if she was full strength, it wouldn't even have been an issue. But she is so weak. And so beat up that it didn't work. And he just was so quick and overpowered her. It was actually rough to see, you know, someone beating up younger kids like this. Back underground. We're back underground now in the mall, in the Russian lair. Hopper checks in on Murray, and Murray says he's all set, but he does have some company down there that he'd love them to obliterate. So Hopper's like, "Will do, hang tight."
I'm three.
I'm three.
One. Two.
Ah, Jesus. Before they can get to three, the effing scary Russian guy shows up. I forgot all about him. He knocks down Hopper, figuring he must have knocked him out. And then Joyce they scrap with Joyce. He ends up roughing her up, pushing her, knocking her out. But much like The Undertaker, Hopper rises, and then the fight begins. Back upstairs in the main kind of lobby area of the mall, Billy is carrying Elle out over his shoulder. And, not to take me out of the story, but I saw an Orange Julius in the background, and I really could have gone for one at that moment. I could go for one right now, actually. And then he lays her down. He lays her down, like, almost gently, like he's presenting an offering. It's rather creepy.
"Don't be afraid. It'll be over soon. Just try and stay very still."
So Eleven is starting to come to. Her eyesight's a little blurry, but she notices the monster of the flayed people goo is there. She looks panicked. Billy stands up before it like he's honoring this thing. And then its mouth opens wide, and one of those tentacle arms comes out, ready to strike at Eleven. And then...
"Flay this, you ugly piece of shit!"
The Wheelermobile gang is back with Lucas's fireworks. I love that the fireworks came back into play. So they are throwing all kinds of fireworks at this thing, and maybe it's hurting it, but it's definitely distracting it and getting its attention. first of all, I mean, when I was a kid, we had firecrackers, we had whistlers, we had, what were they called? Morning glories and bottle rockets and Roman candles. But these fireworks these kids had, it looked like they were dealing with dynamite. Actually, didn't Lucas say, like, you put a bunch of these together, and it's like having a stick of dynamite or a quarter stick of dynamite? He obviously knows his explosions. For whatever reason, these things seem to be thoroughly effective. Back downstairs, Hopper and the Russian, their fighting continues. They head out of the control room, and they're now in the main, I don't know, weapon room, the room with the gate in it, with the weapon going. And they're just standing there, mano a mano, right next to the weapon, kicking the crap out of each other. While this is going on, the kids are still peppering the monster with firework after firework after firework, and it definitely seems to be working. Billy looks like he's in pain. Eleven tries to get away, but Billy grabs her before she can, drags her back to where the monster is, sits on top of her, and smashes her head into the floor. And it was like, ooh, just gruesome. Violent. I don't like it. We keep going back and forth, upstairs, downstairs, upstairs, downstairs. The fight is continuing downstairs as Joyce seems to be coming back into consciousness. And she sees the two guys kicking the shit out of each other right out there by the weapon. The Russian fella gets the upper hand, and all of a sudden Hopper's head is dangerously close to the spinning weapon. The Russian's just standing right on his neck. In the main mall, they're almost out of fireworks. Okay, they call to Dustin. They're like, we got to get this quick. And Dustin calls to Joyce and Hopper, hurry, close it now. Now, Dustin has no idea what's going on underneath. He just knows they need to close this as quickly as possible because the monster is getting the upper hand. And the whole theory is you close the gate and the monster will die. Joyce sees the fight going on. And while she's alone, she comes up with a plan of her own. She ties her belt around one of the keys and then reaches so close to the other key because it's two-key operation. You know, remember the two-man plan that became a three-man operation? So she's got, you know, instead of two guys, or in this case, a man and a woman, turning keys, it's one woman with her hand reaching all the way with a belt on one key and her other hand trying to reach that second key, stretching for as much as she can, but she's not quite there yet. In the back rooms of the mall, Max and Mike wake up, and they realize Elle's not with them. They're like, where the hell is she? Oh, she's still in the main mall with Billy on top of her? Oh, okay. So Billy's on top of her. The monster is freaking the hell out because of all the exploding fireworks. And, yeah, Mike, Max, that's where she is. Get out there. So Eleven seems to notice that when the fireworks hit the monster, Billy is having, like, physical reactions. So she looks deep into his eyes, and I'm not sure if there was this connection or if it's because she had those shared flashbacks in their previous connections in the void. I'm not sure what it is, but she tries to get through to him using these flashbacks. She talks about, you know, 7-foot wave. She talks about the woman she saw and how pretty she was, and she was wearing a dress. And it was working. You could actually see a physical change in Billy's face, like those blue veins were fading away, and there was something like real in his eyes. Sorrow, regret, something where you could see that, I guess it, I mean, could it just, did she just talk it out of him? I don't know. I think it's some connection they must have shared in the void, like I mentioned. It has to be. Because, you know, he just closes his eyes like he's in so much pain. And like a single tear fell from them. And 10 minutes ago, what we saw as Billy, you know, is basically a pawn for the Mind Flayer. That wouldn't have happened. But it did. It seems like Eleven, she made a breakthrough. Now, someone that Eleven is never going to make a breakthrough to is that scary Russian guy. Yeah, he's still down below and his foot is still on Hopper's neck. But While Harper's head is only inches away from the machine, and Joyce is still in the control room, reaching badly, Hopper seems to get some sort of second strength. He lifts the foot off his neck. Then he kind of twists the foot, you know, gets the guy off balance, then grabs him by, like, the scruff of the shirt, I think, and just pulls him straight down. His head smashes into the machine. He, like, rolls back. He's hurt, but he's still trying to fight. He tries to punch Hopper, but...
I'll see you in hell!
Hopper flings him right into the machine. He is instantly dead. The machine definitely, like, gets some damage because it starts going crazy. Lightning starts shooting out of it. It's, like, spinning around, sparking everything. And the lightning actually seems to be blocking Hopper's way back out. Up in the main mall, they're out of fireworks. But on the floor, Billy gets up off of 11. It definitely looks like he's been cured. And it also looks like he's pissed. He stands there looking directly at the monster, like standing in defiance, where just a few minutes ago he was standing there almost like in awe of the thing. At this exact moment, Mike and Max run out to see what's going on. Eleven lying there almost helpless, like still just in a ton of pain. The monster opening its giant maw and extending the tentacle, the tongue-tickle? I'm not sure exactly what it is. But this thing just snaps out and tries to grab Eleven, but Billy stops it. The villain, maybe, the pawn, maybe, but the bad guy, you could say, finally gets his redemption. But then another tentacle shoots out and gets him right in the side of the belly. Then another one. Ooh. Then another one. Ooh. Max looks on in horror. Eleven looks on in horror. Up on the hill, Dustin is pleading for them, yelling on the radio. In the control room, Joyce finally reached the other key. She looks up and she sees Hopper, and they just both look at each other, realizing that they're out of options. So upsetting. Up in the mall, the monster is now holding Billy aloft with all the tentacles. And as Billy just lays there, life draining from him, he lets out this guttural, primal scream of defiance. As one final tentacle just shoots right into his chest. As Max screams his name, he falls over. Down below, Hopper just looks at Joyce and nods, realizing there's only one choice. There's only one thing Joyce can do. And with that, Joyce Byers turns both keys. To destroy the machine. The machine goes cuckoo bananas and explodes. The remaining Russian scientists that were down there just are obliterated to nothing. The gate closes. Joyce looks on in horror. Upstairs, the monster starts suddenly convulsing and freaking out and flashing this way and that, and then it falls over and is dead. Mike runs over to check on Elle. They embrace as Max walks up from behind over to Billy, who is still alive, but barely.
Billy, wake up, please.
He's gone. Billy. But he died a hero. He died knowing that what he did was wrong. Saying sorry. Just not only was he saying sorry to Max, I think, for what happened, but almost for like how he's been. Almost like he's confessing it to his sister. Like, I'm sorry. It should have been different. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into this, but no matter how much they disliked each other or didn't get along, and even though they were stepbrother and stepsister, they were still family. And, you know, Max was overcome with grief. It was sad. She's like, you'd think most of the time she could care less about Billy, but when the reality sets in, she just breaks down crying. And Eleven comforts her. You know, I wrote down right here, Billy was a prick, but he died a hero. And he died saving Eleven. All right. He didn't put Eleven in that. He was possessed. But the real Billy, the Billy that came out, he died. He died saving Eleven. Downstairs, Joyce goes out to the main room, out to see what's left of the machine. There's no trace of Hopper at all. And she just breaks down into tears. As Murray actually runs into the room, gets to her, and he's like, where's Jim? Where is Jim? I don't think, did he ever call him Hopper? I feel like he always called him Jim. I don't know why. Distinction. Something like when I watched Jaws and Hooper never called Brody. He never called him Brody. He never called him Chief. He always called him Martin. I don't know. Just making a connection. There's something about the respect of using someone's first name or the way you see them, you know, or just maybe the way you are as a person. Murray never called him Hopper. And everyone called him Hopper. Joyce called him Hopper. But he always called him Jim. Anyway, I'm besides the point. He's asking where Jim is, and she just shakes her head. And it's like they don't even have time to like cry or anything. The Russians are still down there. They're not all gone. So they as they make their way into the control room, into that main control room, Joyce and Murray just make a mad dash out of there, back out the way they came. Up on the hill, where Dustin and Erica have been, with the radio tower, they hear something. And they look over their shoulders, and they see this fleet of helicopters flying overhead, heading towards the Starcourt. In the mall parking lot, we see them land, and out comes a bunch of U.S. soldiers, and Mr. Paul Reiser himself, Dr. Sam Owens, the one scientist that I feel like you can trust on Stranger Things. So they start making their way into the mall. In the base, U.S. soldiers start rushing in left and right as well. Murray and Joyce just come out of the vent when the American soldiers come in, and they're like, don't shoot. They raise their hands. Don't shoot. We're Americans. We're Americans. U.S. soldiers are now all over the base, checking every nook, every corner. They make their way down to the weapon room, and that's where we see Dr. Owens. He sees the weapon. He sees the rift that it's closed. He looks at this like, oh no, not again. Like, he can't believe that this horror story still is going on. Back outside the mall, firefighters have shown up and they're rushing in, trying to put out the fires that are going on in the mall. And we look and we see soldiers walking this way and that way, and a bunch of soldiers are escorting Joyce and Murray out of the mall. And Joyce just has her head on a swivel. She's looking every direction. She's looking for the kids, looking for her kids. And her and Will have this great moment. They run up. They share a huge hug. I'm sure she probably asked about Jonathan, right? I'm sure she asked if he's okay. Will must have said something. They're both happy, and they're both crying, and they're just kind of just drained with emotion. And Joyce looks up, and she sees Eleven. And Eleven sees her hugging Will, and she sees Joyce. She starts to look around, and she realizes there's no Hopper. Where's Hopper? And it seems like it almost hits her, that exact moment. And then it fades to black. And then the screen says, 3 months later.
Welcome to Hawkins, Indiana. A wonderful place to grow up, to raise your family, to walk your dog. But then, on July 4th, everything changed. A terrible tragedy struck this small town. But this was not this small town's first brush with tragedy. Mysterious deaths, government cover-ups, a bizarre chemical leak. Is it all linked? All a vast conspiracy? The fault of a disgraced corrupt mayor? Or is something more going on in the heartland? Can a town itself be cursed? Some believe a rise in Satanism is to blame. To find out, tune in tonight at 8 p.m. for Horror in the Heartland on Cutting Edge.
So 3 months have passed, and it opens up with a very fun montage that reminds me of an old show that used to be called Current Affair. It's a show I watched when I was a kid that was kind of like all these... like, what's going on with this small town? And it's fun. It kind of, so this is poking fun at that. It's like a TV promo for some, like, you know, cable news show. And it talks about the horror in the heartland. What's going on with mysterious disappearances or deaths? It showed Bob Newby. It showed Barb. It talked about a chemical spill, so I'm sure that was some cover-up story. It talked about corruption. It showed the mayor being taken away in handcuffs. But it also talked about Satanism. And when it zoomed in on Dungeons and Dragons stuff, which I thought was hilarious because there was actually a book and a movie. It's kind of based on something where, like, this guy killed himself, dealt with Dungeons and Dragons, and there was a crappy TV movie made. Was it supposed to be like Wizards and Warlocks was the name of the movie? I don't know. Like, it was an early Tom Hanks movie that he was in a little and they stuck him on the VHS cover. I don't know. But it had something to do with like the dangers of Dungeons and Dragons, I think. Was it video games? I don't remember. But just made me think of that. And I thought that was a pretty fun moment. But it, as that montage ends, we see a car pull up into a video store. Robin and Steve head in, and they're both trying to get a job. And I'm pretty sure it's the same kid that we saw from the arcade, right? Wasn't he in season 2 of the arcade? And he quizzes them on their favorite movie, or their favorite movies. And Robin gives like some pretty artsy movie answers, like The Apartment and this and that. And Steve is like, I don't know. Like, he says, oh, wait. Animal House. The one with Alex P. Keaton tries to bang his mom. Cause remember, he just saw Back to the Future. It was actually kind of funny that, he remembered it even though he was so high that last time. He didn't give great answers. And the guy was like, said to Robin, you know, you start Monday, you start never. And you could see Steve was like, ugh. But Robin's like, come on, let me talk to him. So she talks to the guy alone. He's like, look, he doesn't, you know, maybe his movie tastes aren't the best, but he has other qualities. He's like, look, he was a jerk in high school. And, I hate Harrington. She's like, no, you don't understand. Okay. Maybe he was a prick in high school. Okay. He's changed. And here's the thing. The ladies still love him. They love coming to see him. In fact, there are so many ladies. There are too many ladies, too many for him to handle. Okay. That means there'll be lots of women here, women that will, if he can't handle them, that means they're like, the overflow would be for her too. And for him. And she's like, he's like, what are you guy's dating, and then he knocks over a Fast Times at Ridgemont High cardboard thing, like a billboard, whatever they call that thing. Kids, video stores were a thing. I used to work at a video store. And yes, you had those cardboard things everywhere promoting the movies. And he's like, oh yeah, Fast Times. That's one of my favorite movies too. And Robin just gives the guy a look. He's like, nope, we're just friends. It was just a fun kind of little character moment to show what they're up to. You know, they're not with everyone else, right? Moving in, moving out at the buyers. No, they're off doing their own thing. But it seems like they are now thick as thieves, the best of friends, and they're going to work together. And, it was funny. Robin said to the guy, you know, we weren't fired from the mall store. The mall, you know, burnt down, remember? Or something like that, exactly. But I'm just excited to see where they go the next season. You know, Steve and Dustin's friendship has emerged over the last three seasons, and now we get to see Steve and Robin's friendship emerge, which will be cool. We cut over to the buyer's residence. Well, it's still the buyer's residence at this moment, but they're moving. I mean, honestly, can you blame them? Hawkins really hasn't been that good to them over the last couple of years. But I still don't want to see them go. I hate change. So we see Jonathan and Nancy packing stuff in the U-Haul. And inside, Max, Lucas, and Dustin are helping them pack things. Really, Max and Lucas are just teasing the hell out of Dustin. The two of them are singing the Neverending Story song. Not quite as harmonious as Dustin was with Susie, but it served its purpose, teasing him, and Dustin just flipped them the bird. He was not amused. In the other room, we see Will come out with a bunch of books, a bunch of Dungeons and Dragons books, and he puts them inside a box. And Mike takes notice of this.
Whoa, dude, that's the donation box. I know. I'll just use yours when I come back. I mean, if we still want to play.
Yeah, but what if you want to join another party?
Not possible.
I love that moment because so much in the early part of the season, all Will wanted to do was play Dungeons and Dragons. And the other kids were focused on other things. They were focused on girls. And Will was like, come on, let's play. Come on, let's play. And it never came to it. And then as the buyers are moving away, Will goes and donates his Dungeons and Dragons books. And Mike's like, whoa, aren't you still going to want to play? He's like, I'll just play when I come back. And, you know, Mike's like, yeah, but what about if someone there, you know, what if you want to join another campaign? And Will was like, no chance that would happen. I love that because Will didn't want to just play Dungeons & Dragons. He wanted to play Dungeons & Dragons with his best friends. Anything else would not qualify. Anything else would, just nothing would match that. And you could see that Mike appreciated that. You know, he had a nice smile on his face. Will had a nice smile on his face. It was almost like, look, things are changing, but it's okay. Because we're still friends, and we'll still be in touch. And when we play Dungeons & Dragons, which I can almost say, when we play Dungeons & Dragons, we'll be playing it together, because that's the only way we play. We cut over to another room, and we see Jonathan just having a quiet moment in his empty bedroom. 17 years of his life, he said, packed up in one day. Nancy gives him a nice hug and just says, what if I just don't let you go? And you could just see she's really, really sad that he's leaving. And they share a hug. Yes, it's young love, but it's tough, especially if that is the one. I mean, come on. I was 17 once. I'm, you know, not 17 anymore. And the girl that I was with when I'm 17, She's in the other room right now. She's my wife, but I don't want anything weird to sound, you know, creepy or anything. It's my wife. She's in the other room. So, I mean, this could be real love. What I'm saying is this could be real love at this age. So, of course, the pain of being separated is real. And you could see it in Nancy and Jonathan's eyes. Now, I know the two actors were dating at some point, so that feeling probably easy for them to muster up. I don't know if they still are. I have no idea. But I don't know. I wanted to share that moment because especially when you're moving out of a room. I mean, whenever I move, I get sad. I think about the old place and the new place. Oh, that happens to me all the time. Especially like think about the house you spent your entire life in. That's a big one. In the other room, Eleven's also trying to help pack things up. She spots a teddy bear that's up on the top of a closet on a shelf. And she goes up there. She can't quite reach it. So she tries to use her powers. And she just, like, strains. But no luck.
They'll come back. I know they will.
Thanks.
Packed your walkie, right?
Yes.
Because you know that I'm going to steal Cerebro from Dustin and call you so much you're going to have to turn it off, right?
Did you talk to your mom about Thanksgiving?
Yeah. I got the okay. I'll be there. And then I was thinking maybe you could come up here for Christmas. And Will, too. You can come before or after Christmas or whatever Mrs. Byers wants, but I was thinking Christmas Day could be super fun because we'd all have cool new presents to play with and, sorry, that made me sound like a 7-year-old.
I like presents, too.
Yeah, cool, yeah. Cool. I like presents, too.
Cool. Mike?
Yeah?
Remember that day at the cabin, you were talking to Max?
I don't think I follow.
You talked about your feelings, your heart.
Oh, yeah, that. Man, that was so long ago. I don't know, it's just heat of the moment stuff, and we were arguing, I don't really remember. What did I say exactly?
Mike. I love you too.
Whew. Okay. Look, I'm far too old to have these mushy emotions for a TV show, teen romance. And yet, here we are. Whew. Great moment. I'm sorry. I know I'm playing these long clips, but you know what? This is the finale. Okay? We don't know what's going to happen at this point. I got to play these clips to remember these characters at this moment. This is where we last see them, pretty much. Ah, great moment, great moment. Those two kids are just made for each other, aren't they? But yeah, it seems like her powers still aren't working. Meanwhile, Joyce is in another room, and she's folding up some clothes, and she ends up folding one of Hopper's police uniform shirts. When she finds a piece of paper in one of the pockets, she takes it out, and it was the note that he wrote for that heart-to-heart talk that he was, you know, planning with Joyce so long ago, the conversation that he wanted to have with Eleven. Just as that happened, Eleven walked in the room, asked about donating that teddy bear, and she noticed the letter in Joyce's hand.
What is that?
It's the speech Hop wrote for you and Mike.
Speech?
Yeah. You know, the heart-to-heart. He never talked to you, did he?
Can I read?
Something I've been wanting to talk to you both about. I know this is a difficult conversation, but I care about you both very much. And I know that you care about each other very much, and that's why it's important that we set these boundaries moving forward so we can build an environment where we all feel comfortable, trusted, and open to sharing our feelings. Feelings. Jesus. The truth is, for so long, I'd forgotten what those even were. I've been stuck in one place, in a cave, you might say, a deep, dark cave. And then I left some egos out in the woods, and you came into my life, and for the first time in a long time, I started to feel things again. I started to feel happy. But lately, I guess I've been feeling distant from you. Like you're pulling away from me or something. I miss playing board games every night. Making triple-decker ego extravaganzas at sunrise. Watching westerns together before we doze off. But I know you're getting older. Growing. Changing. And I guess, if I'm being really honest, that's what scares me. I don't want things to change. So I think maybe that's why I came in here. To try to maybe stop that change. To turn back the clock. To make things go back to how they were. But I know that's naive. It's just not how life works. It's moving. Always moving, whether you like it or not. And yeah, sometimes it's painful. Sometimes it's sad. And sometimes it's surprising. Happy. So you know what? Keep on growing up, kid. Don't let me stop you. Make mistakes, learn from them. And when life hurts you, because it will, remember the hurt. The hurt is good. It means you're out of that cave. But please, if you don't mind, for the sake of your poor old dad, keep the door open 3 inches.
If you didn't think I was going to play that entire thing, you're out of your mind. That was so heartwarming and gut-wrenching, and it's just like, ugh. So Elle's reading this letter, and we see like a montage of it as it's going on. We get a montage of the friends all saying goodbye to each other and crying. We actually get to see a flashback of Hopper working on the notes and the speech in his cabin. We see they're gone. At one point, they drive off. Jonathan, Will, and Eleven are gone. It's kind of a weird little time thing they do here, because while they're leaving, we also then cut back at the end of the letter, and we see Eleven still reading it, and then we see them leave again from like a different angle. So Jonathan, Will, and Eleven, and Joyce are gone. They're driving, they're moving. I don't know exactly where. I feel like they said it earlier in the season, but they didn't say it here. And the rest of the kids just get on their bikes. Mike takes one last look back at the Byers residence, and then he heads home. He heads home, and when he gets home, you could just see he looked completely exhausted and sad and broken down. His girlfriend, the love of his life, is gone. And but, you know, he talked about Christmas and Thanksgiving, and they'll see each other, but that's when you're a kid, you know, 2 days is forever. And he just goes in, and his mom gives him a big hug. And then we see Max in her room, sad, alone. Why wouldn't she be? I mean, Billy is gone. Now she's, unfortunately, she's stuck behind with her mother and that terrible stepdad. We do see a nice moment. Those D&D books for donating, Dustin took them, and he gave them to Erica. Remember, she's, quote-unquote, not a nerd, but she seemed pretty happy getting them. And remember, I said they kind of played with timing here a little bit. So now we go back, and we see them all head out of the house again, and we see Joyce, now alone, just kind of standing at the door of the empty house for one last moment. She gives a look around, she takes a deep breath, and then she closes the door. And then the credits roll, and that is the end of Stranger Things 3. Or is it? It fades to black, but there's no theme song, there's no music playing, and all of a sudden we start to see something else on the screen, and as more of it shows up, we realize it's snow falling, and we hear wind blowing. And then all of a sudden, we start to see something. And then on the screen, it says, Kamchatka, Russia. So we seem to be in some sort of Russian prison. And we see these two Russian guards, and they're like, no, not the American. They go to one door, they say, not the American. And they go to another door, and they open this, you know, cell, and this Russian dude is freaking out. He's like, no, no, not me, please, no, 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 no. And they drag this guy, and they drag him down the halls, drag him through this place, and they take him, and they throw him in this room. And he lands in this room, and there's all this red stuff, possibly blood, on the floor. And he's, like, begging for his life, begging for them. And they close him in this room alone. And then it reminded me of, like, Return of the Jedi, where they take and they crank this thing open, and this door opens up. And the guy in the cell is just, like, beside himself in horror. And we look, and inside this door, something starts to come out. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, it's a Demogorgon. It's one of those Demogorgon dog things. And wait, is that standing up? Oh, my goodness gracious. And then this monster goes right up to this prisoner, now standing on 2 feet, just goes right up to it, opens up its face. And, well, you can imagine what happens next. And now that is the real end of Stranger Things 3. That little button, that little extra little scene, just, my God, it provides so much, so many questions. First of all, did the Russians have other gates going? Did they already have a gate open? Did they open the gate before and get this monster out? Is this monster left over from another gate, from the original gate? Is this like, where do they get this Demogorgon monster? And how, like, are they just feeding it to keep it tame? Like, how many prisoners have they used? How, all these questions. Who is the American? It's got to be Hopper, right? That's my first thought. I know we've seen previews of things since then. But right away you think, oh my God, Hopper is alive somehow. Like, did the weapon blow him back? Did the weapon... Ooh, what if it put him in the upside down and they got him out? Remember, 3 months have passed, so they maybe were doing more experiments. So, I mean, I'm spitballing, just finishing the episode and not reading anything else. So maybe the laser shot him into the upside down and he got out. But when he got out, one of these creatures came with it. So they put him in a prison and they've been trying to figure this creature out ever since. Oh my God. Oh my God. There is just so much to think about, so much to unpack. I mean, the season's over, but we know it's coming back. We know there will be a Stranger Things 4. When is it going to happen? I'm not entirely sure. I'm starting to see some headlines. You know, obviously, it had to shut down production with everything going on in the world, but I hear shows are starting to come back, so hopefully we will have some news on that soon. But what do we know at this point? We know that they closed this gate, and the Mind Flayer once again was foiled. The monster was created, was defeated, destroyed, I'm sure, burnt up, right? Didn't they burn it and destroy it? And the monster's gone. But the Upside Down still is there. The Mind Flayer still is there. And it still wants Eleven. Isn't that the ultimate goal? It just needs to find another way out. But Eleven, Will, and Jonathan moved on. They are there with Joyce to wherever they moved. Things are going to be different. I mean, gosh, every year these kids age so much. And from what I understand, season 4 isn't even going to be the last season, which is just spectacular. My hope is that I don't take another year to finish a whole season. That is the goal. That is the goal. But I feel really good right now. I have been, you know, I was doing other podcast projects last month, and that's what delayed things. And then I started putting everything together, and it takes a little while to get all the notes and all the sound clips done for me. But once I hit record, that's when I'm like, I can relax and just kind of talk and try to make sense of some of my notes. And I just feel really good about finally getting this episode done, finally getting this season done, and really being up to date with everything Stranger Things. But that being said, this isn't the end of the podcast. Okay? There will be more. There will be things coming soon, very soon. And there's going to be an episode pretty quickly after this, kind of talking about what's next. And I hope you guys tune in. I hope you guys check it out. It's all Stranger Things related. But it is something we can do together to kind of bridge the gap as we wait now for however long we have to wait until we get Stranger Things 4. But until then, I want to thank each and every one of you for sticking with me through these long delays. And I appreciate it so much for you guys, you know, with all the iTunes, Apple reviews. I really appreciate it. As I don't know if I mentioned this before when I was recording, because some of this I recorded yesterday, but we're available on Amazon Music now. I don't even know how that works, but if you have Amazon Music or Alexa, you can listen to us through there. And of course, Spotify, where I think most of you are from, Apple Podcast. We're available, obviously, everywhere podcasts are available. So I would gladly appreciate it if you stay subscribed, because there will be more coming. And in the meantime, you know, you can find me every day on Twitter at Geek Mentality. That's my personal Twitter handle. But the show also has a Twitter account. It's at StrangerDPod, because I couldn't think of, you know, like, I couldn't make a more confusing Twitter account. So at StrangerDPod, Stranger D Pod is the podcast account. At Geek Mentality is my account. And the website is fansnotexperts.com. Everything I do for podcasting is there. Stranger Things and all the other stuff that you probably won't have any interest in. But if you do, you could check it out. And maybe there'll be something that you like. But this is the only podcast that I do like this. This is the only podcast where I prepare and I actually do some production. A lot of my other podcasts, I just hit record and talk, which is a lot easier, but it's not as gratifying when you finish putting everything together. And this was very gratifying. And yes, this was my longest episode yet, but still I thought it would be a little longer. It's not as long as I thought it would be. But, you know, all good things must come to an end. So, yeah, this is it, my friends, for now. But believe me, you'll hear from me soon. But this is it, talking about episodes. There are no new episodes of Stranger Things to talk about. So we are done. Thank you so much. And until you hear from me again, beware the Russians.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.